Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Blind Bargains Cast, episode 62. I am Joe, he is JJ, and we are back with you after having a little bit of a week off. Can't be helped sometimes when you have busy, busy things that happen in the offline world. Doggone that offline world.
That offline world, it's a little bit crazy. I probably sound a little bit different to you this week. I am live here from, well, live on the recording. We know how that goes.
Unknown.
The Blast Conference here in the Windy City, which, by the way, is not the windiest city in the world, but it is a windier city.
Pizza.
Yes, had some of that last night here hanging out with Chicago, near Chicago in Rosemont, Illinois, National Association of Blind Merchants. It's a conference for vendors and entrepreneurs, a really cool thing. The next one will be in Nashville, Tennessee next September. So a really cool event. We had a booth here. We did a presentation on the iPhone. And by the way, also caught up little bit with Kevin Worley, who him and Jessica Beecham have a new fitness podcast, if you haven't heard, called Find Your Fit. And they've had some pretty cool guests on there, people from the National Beatball Association. They had Eric Weinmeier on. They've got a few others. So another new podcast that's out there, and I always like seeing more of those out there. It's really cool.
I think that is fantastic. Different voices, all sorts of ideas, and great guests. You know, we were actually recommended in a couple of podcasts recently, and we were in good company. I'll put a link in the show notes about that as well, which was kind of nice because we were recommended in several podcast circles. And by the way, you guys have been recommending us to a lot of your friends because we've certainly seen it in the numbers. So we do appreciate that because of, well, sponsors like our good friends at HIMS, because that's what keeps this show going, is sponsorships and telling about this show to your friends and others. Help us get those numbers up there to impress other sponsors as well.
Thank you so much. Yep, HIMS, Lifestyle Innovation. Of course, there's a lot of CSUN coverage and continues to be an active sponsor of the Blind Bargains Cast. You can too, just let us know. Feedback at blindbargains.com. And you would think with 2 weeks, we'd have double the news.
Radiohead released a new record.
That was
good. I'm okay. All over that. Yeah, I mean, huge.
There's a bit of a baseball kerfuffle going on. I mean, little things, and there was a Google.
Yeah. I would not like to get in between Texas and Toronto.
Yeah. Not at the moment. You know, and you would think with a big Google conference I.O. that we'd have a whole show on that like we did last year. Sure, but no,
tons of things because we're recording on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. So you think
that's
that people
true.
Would just be
There's
rolling
been all sorts of tweets
out the
about
news.
That. But we have enough to fill a show, so we'll at least do that. And
absolutely.
We'll just do these in no particular order because there's no huge lead, but starting with Apple, Joe.
Well, Apple has gone out of its way many a times to mention that they are the leaders with accessibility in the mainstream. And to kind of back that up a little bit, they released an entire section of audio described movies, something that we had asked for last year during Netflix's big move forward on audio description. Seems that Apple is now showing and sporting and just pretty much throwing it out there. New titles such as Deadpool and others that are audio described.
The Peanuts movie. That's the one you got, right?
Yes, that actually I'm a big fan of Snoopy. You say
you can
that,
get the Force Awakens that's in there now, and
which
many many hundreds.
Cool.
And that's not just like there was like a couple dozen maybe before, but they're in the hundreds now.
And you can find them in Apple TV. You can find them on your iDevice of sorts. Mac content I've heard is a little harder to find through iTunes, but iTunes also saw an update this week, and it is hard to find anything in iTunes anyway, even more so with the new update, not just on Mac, but also it's not extremely accessible in Windows, I've heard other people
again,
say. I don't use iTunes anymore,
man.
So I can't help
you know, I will say, I mean, obviously I don't use my iDevice every day, but I use it quite a bit, and I really try. I don't have iTunes installed on my computer.
No, me neither.
I just mean, luckily, I don't have to deal with it. I know there are a few cases where you need to have it. But yeah, there's a lot of content on there. Here's my one question, which I'm not sure if you know the answer to. You have to buy the audio described version of the movie separately at this point, right? You can't. Can you buy?
I have seen conflicting reports. What I have heard was that older movies that you have purchased that have audio description showing up for them now can be replaced with audio description. I saw a couple of people on Twitter talking about that.
That's interesting. I mean, ideally,
you can go
you'd
into
be able to buy
your device settings and always go in and say that you want audio description, so that way it goes to it by default.
But ideally, you'd be able to buy, kind of like on Netflix, you'd be able to buy a movie and choose in any given moment, do you want the audio description on or off? You shouldn't have to make that decision at purchase time. So maybe one of our listeners could help us clarify that.
Yeah.
How that goes.
Let's dive into that for 1 second. I have The Force Awakens on Blu-ray, and that has audio description, but it doesn't default to it. When you put it in for the first time, it, you know, takes you to a screen which does not talk and then asks what version of the file would you like to watch? You know, would you like to watch the English version, the French version, English with audio description? If you really wanted to see The Force Awakens with audio description and you didn't have someone sighted around to assist you, then this is a great opportunity for you to get, you know, The Force Awakens
right away
through that. It's because it's also available on the Disney Anywhere app, but it's not under the audio described section yet. So I have actually The Force Awakens enabled through the audio, through the Disney Anywhere app, and that doesn't have audio description. So if you're looking for a specific content, and you could rent it, which is even better. Say if you didn't want to buy it, there are a lot of these titles that are available for rent.
With audio description. Okay.
Right. And so that way you could do both at the same time.
And that's what, maybe $4 or $5 to rent one of these generally?
Depending on what kind of, if it's an A-list title and it just came out, it could be like Deadpool $5.99. If it's an older title, it could be $3.99.
Okay. But, you know, in rental generally is like 24 hours, I would assume. It's some, you know.
Right. You have 30 days to watch it, but 24 from the second you start it.
Okay. Got you. Okay. See, that's just one of those things. You know, I rented movies back in the day and, you know, the old trip to the video store back when that was a thing. And then, you know, then Netflix came along. So I never have done the whole renting a movie online. I usually just try to find a way.
It's awesome on a Saturday or a Friday night, you know, Grubhub pizza, like Liam, you know, you can Grubhub something with your Apple TV, then, you know, app switcher over and start renting a movie and watching it and kind of have dinner in a movie. That is super cool. The way that movies come out so fast, you can kind of sort of be up with your friends and really
and just decide.
And this puts things back onto Amazon and Hulu to get with the program, right? Doctor Who, it was available on Netflix. It was audio described. This week, I answered several questions for people about how could they watch legally The Doctor audio described, because now that it's an exclusive on Amazon, there's no audio description. Mm-hmm. There's the ability to do it. The menus exist, and they do talk if you're using iOS. But if you're trying to actually watch content in audio description, well, you're kind of out of luck. So you're going to have to buy like the Region 2 DVDs and the Region 2 Blu-rays in order to get that. And that's, it's a little cumbersome.
It can be, for sure. What's a little less cumbersome, if you want to go about doing it this way, is actually buying a Braille display, among other things, from Apple, as in an Apple store. Now, I don't think every Apple store is going to bring in a demo of a $3,000 item like a Brailleant. Prove me wrong, but that seems to be a lot of an outlay to do something like this. But
no, they have a couple of $3,000 sound systems in the Apple store app.
They're going to sell a few more of them than Braille displays, but
cannot pick up at Apple store.
I'm guessing this is going to be an online exclusive type deal, but at least there are certain items now, such as Brailleant Braille displays and some other lesser costs. I was trying to figure out
switches. There's a lot of switches.
A lot of switches. A couple music things, although the musicians that I've talked to aren't so thrilled about those. These musician slider things have to bug Patrick.
Hopefully, it's a good first start, because I would like it to be more than HumanWare Brailleant products as well. I wouldn't like that to be where people who don't know that there is more than one Braille display in the world only think that that's being carried.
Well, it's a cool awareness piece. And you know, for some people that are asking, no, this is not going to lower the price of a Brailleant, at least not for now. It's not. Apple generally doesn't compete on price anyway. So the products that they generally have in their store, they're selling
more than likely. This is an education play. This is a play to schools. And if they're buying Macs, then they could possibly tie it in and then
into the same purchase order. Yeah, exactly.
All in one spot.
There's probably very little cost to Apple as far as an item like a Brailleant. I'm guessing they committed to a very low number of these things, if any, or it's just going to say, hey, we'll keep a few of these on hand, or even so, we'll just get it from HumanWare when we need to get one to send to someone. But, still, it's really cool to see it and, you know, to see more of these things pop up in mainstream places. Now, of course, this is nothing entirely new, because a lot of stores like Amazon and even Walmart have what's called third-party marketplaces. You know, you can buy some of the AT guys stuff on Amazon, and you can buy other things on Amazon. So it's not entirely new to see something like a Braille display in a mainstream store, but the fact that Apple is doing it directly is still a pretty cool idea.
And it follows through with some of the rumors that were coming around in October that this was going to happen. We had mentioned this on the show, that we had read it from several reports that they were going in this direction. So this is kind of neat to see that it is actually happening. Maybe in certain major cities, they'll do more awareness presentations. I know there are a couple of Apple user groups that hook up at one of the Apple stores in Houston. Raul Galagos and others kind of do that. So there is a good opportunity here, like you were saying earlier, to kind of make this more aware. Now, does that mean that we get into an arms race with the Microsoft store? Do they go around and grab HIMS displays? Is that...
Hey, you know, why not? I guess so. I mean,
I see James McCarthy making calls now. I really do. That's the, you know, that's going to happen. You said that they probably won't sell a whole bunch of these. That's probably right, because Amazon probably won't sell a whole bunch of these things that'll make your Kindle Paperwhite talk. Now, this is cool. I won't lie, but I don't know how many of these things we're going to see in the wild.
Could you help me out? So you've played with these a little more than me. So the Kindle Paperwhite, I'm looking at $79 here.
Right.
Why would I get that versus the accessibility or not? Why
had
would I
get that? Conversation with a couple of people right. online.
$49 regular Kindle, Kindle Fire, or this. What are the differences, and why would I get something like that?
I will say this. Maybe it's a school district. Maybe it's a family member who already had one, or you got one, or your spouse got one. And you would like to have the ability to use it or monitor it, say, in the case of a child, right? That would be a use case for these. But I mainly see these in educational environments and people who've already bought these. And also to knock pundits like us in the face with, hey, every Kindle is accessible, but this one.
Right. So this one has a better screen than the $50 one I'm looking
at. Well, the Paperwhite is trying to look
like paper. It looks like a book.
Right. Yeah, it and there is a lot of studies that show that the more that you can make this look like paper, the easier it is on the eyes and for cognition.
It's right up there. Yeah, won't tire your eyes in the dark. Yeah, it guides light toward the surface of the display.
Exactly. So it's a very popular model, but it doesn't have speakers, and naturally that would lend it to not talking.
That does make it really difficult.
Yeah.
But it has a headphone jack.
This extension is really neat because now you can have the opportunity to use this or, again, monitor that, or if you needed to update it. Let's say you don't feel comfortable with your children updating their Kindles, and there was a recent update for Kindles that would knock them off WhisperNet if they didn't do the update. Remember, they sent like postcards out to people and stuff to say, hey, you want to update your older Kindles? So, again, I think this is kind of neat, and it certainly seems to be falling in line with what you heard from Peter back in March about their movement towards accessibility being a more global effort.
Yeah, but of course, you know, looking at HumanWare, which we're going to get into here in a second, I've been at some of the recent conferences, and HumanWare showing off the Braille Note Touch has been one of the biggest crowds. So everyone says that they're done with note takers. There's no more reason for a note taker. They've been getting a lot of interest in the Braille Note Touch. We have a link to a new YouTube video that has a bit of a demonstration, more information. Of course, we did the podcast at CSUN, and there's a lot more coming out. This thing is about ready to go. So you can get the 18 cell for $39, the 32 for $54. But if you have an Apex or even an older one, you can save up to $1,500. One of the biggest knocks of note takers, admittedly, and probably the biggest knock of any note taker, is that they fell behind. They might be okay when they first come out, but eventually they're going to fall behind with software. So, you know, they're demoing this using Google Docs. They're demoing this using modern technology that's getting updated. And now HumanWare doesn't have to have the brunt of updating everything to serve everybody. So it's going to be interesting to see if this will be enough to revive the note taker. But this is the most excitement I've seen around a note taker in a while.
It is neat to have that kind of floating out there because, well, we've heard it before. I will never buy KNFB at $100. I will never buy X, Y, or Z. This year, we even saw people freaking out about the headphone jack on the iPhone going, maybe I should consider Android. Never say never, right? Is that kind of the idea here? Is that those of you who are dyed-in-the-wool fans of a certain product, and I said this before about my friend in Waco who loves the Keynote Companion, he's going to jump all over this. I know him. I know he's already in line for this because that was just the preferred note-taker he really enjoyed. And there is some aspects to having a dedicated device. I had a conversation on Twitter not too long ago about why the ID Galaxy versus, you know, a phone with apps.
You know,
and there's just something to say about having a dedicated thing.
It's a big investment, too. Look at how much downtime Humanware had. They really hadn't updated the Apex in a couple years and fell quite behind. HIMSS took a pretty big lead as far as note-taker features. So if HIMSS or any other country were to think, you know what, at some point we also need to upgrade our software to something more modern, it's a big investment of time and resources that you're going to have to consider as any other company. Like, do we want to move forward to a completely new platform and rewrite everything and lose everything that we've written in the past 10 years? You know, or do we want to try to work with what we have currently and go that way? So it's going to be an interesting next couple of years in the note-taker markets, making us reconsider. We're going to update our Blind Bargains Android app. We're starting to work on that. And that, you know, we were always planning on doing that, but the Android note-takers and some other things as well is kind of pushing us a little bit faster now.
Yeah, and Humanware's not new to Android. They talked about this before, but they've been in interviews with us on another program about Android. So they have been investigating this for a long time. Greg has been involved in that. I've had conversations offline with Greg. There have been a lot of thought put into this and how adaptive could they make it to drag in old people to make them feel comfortable and make it very, you know, comparable to those who are new. The same thing that Microsoft is trying to do with Windows 10. You might have heard recently that Windows 10 will no longer be free. That is kind of what Microsoft is saying. And Windows 10 Anniversary Edition is coming up fast upon us, rumors being July 29th as the update to Windows Anniversary, which will bring us those three new voices and narrator and all the improvements in that direction. But the question is, will you pay for it? $119 for the home version, $199 for the pro version. Naturally, if you do that, you can actually downgrade back to Windows 7 and then upgrade to Windows 10 later if you feel comfortable. Of course, that kind of involves you going to Windows 10 and then rolling back, which can be very painful. But it would do it that way if you want to be able to still run Windows 7 and then have Windows 10 in your back pocket for later. If you want to avoid all of this and stay on Windows 10 and still give you the flexibility of moving to Windows 10.
Yes. So the thinking now, so they're saying if you have accessibility software like a screen reader, then you don't have to upgrade within a year to 10, or as far as the free upgrades, yeah, especially are going to be extended. Now, first of all, how are they going to prove this? I mean, anybody can just download MVDA, be like, oh yeah, I have accessibility software, which leads me to believe it's going to be pretty easy. And one of those things you're going to see up on Lifehacker or one of these sites.
Yes,
how to use accessibility software to get a free upgrade to Windows 10.
Slashdot even retweeted about that. And I was kind of excited and dismayed about that. I've never been a fan of auto accessibility checkers. I don't like disclosing to websites and or companies that I'm using assistive technology. There are several security issues around that. There are several other issues that are involved in that too, for all the obvious reasons. I don't know. I don't know whether you go in and register. Do you tie to things? I mean, I don't know.
And there's still a chance they might just extend it for everybody for another year.
And there's a possibility of that. Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot have talked about that very loosely. That, you know, Microsoft has been known to say one thing and 3 weeks later do something completely different. Xbox One being a perfect example of that. I don't know. That is a very good question. I know that there have been some things that have come out, but they have not fully committed all the way around. This is kind of just that initial talk. And Microsoft occasionally does what Apple does, which is, wouldn't it be neat if we did something? And then the public goes, oh God, no. And then they kind of retreat a little bit. So I don't know if this is testing the waters. I don't know if this is a plan in place, but this at least should make some people happy that if they do require or if they do need this for whatever their use case is, that Microsoft is thinking about you and making some plans in that direction. MSFT, there we go. Accessibility has been very active on Twitter, by the way. So if you want to know more, please follow that feed on Twitter because they have been very talkative about some of the updates coming, not just to that, but Office 365 and others.
You know, there's a lot of going on this year. Another anniversary going on, too, of course, with NVIDIA. We'll be talking a lot about that. Their 10th anniversary. And pretty amazing how that's been happening. And
10 NVIDIA, years.
That's crazy.
10 years.
NVIDIA Con was an event to celebrate a lot of that. And they had several sessions. And if you missed it, well, you didn't miss it because you can get the recordings of it now. It looks like quite a few cool few things there. You can have the keynotes with Mick and Jamie. You can, a lot of talk about add-ons and various things. Dictation Bridge was covered. NVDA 101 for users of other screen readers. That's kind of interesting. A lot of you are like, oh, I want to use NVDA, but I'm so used to JAWS or whatever, and I just don't know how I would transition. So that might be a session that you check out.
That's why I put Windows on my Mac. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
NVDA and employment. So a whole bunch of other things. Interactive lab on writing and NVDA add-ons. Add-on writing. I'm going to have to check that one out myself because it's something I'm really interested in. Yes, because you could do a lot with, you know, add-ons are pretty much your JAWS or WindowEye scripts, for those of you who are not familiar. And that's how, you know, even the more advanced things now, the fact that they can be written in a regular programming language, you can find your pool of developers. If you have, say you're in customer service, you need someone to write software to make it so it speaks for you. It's so much easier potentially for someone to write an add-on in Python or some other language than to write a script in a language that they don't know. So we're JAWS is doing that. Of course, WindowEye also lets you do it in more mainstream languages. But you know, it's.
But how do you feel about the conversation that's been happening lately about how if you live in Firefox, NVDA is really good for you, but if you want to or have to live in IE for whatever reason, banking or your corporate network, you're kind of relying more on WindowEye, JAWS, and other screen readers because that's kind of not where NVDA does its best. And then you throw that in with the articles that came out this week that said that Chrome has surpassed Firefox and just about every other web browser out there, and not really any screen reader is extremely good NVDA at Windows Chrome.
NVDA is almost there. It's better than the others, and I know the JAWS and WindowEye are pretty far behind. And which is pretty unfortunate because the times I've used Chrome, it is way snappier than the others. I'm mostly a Firefox user, and luckily, you know, in running my own business, I don't have too many needs to go to Internet Explorer unless you have some crazy website that like that they're just going to purposely check to see if you're running Firefox and lock you out just because they can and they thought it was good code to put
in. Your web browser is not supported. You should update to the latest. Yes, I know this very well.
Yeah, the website that hasn't been updated in 5 years, but this website works best with IE6. We see you're not running IE6. Yeah,
that's because exactly.
I'm running 11. Come on now. your checker's little, you know, it's why they didn't call it Windows 9, because bad code and things like that.
I think we come back to, again, there is no one screen reader or operating system to rule them all if you work in certain environments or if you're a student growing up, especially interested in STEM. You're just not going to marry one particular operating system and or browser.
You have to have multiples, especially screen readers. You got to have two screen. If you're a JAWS or WindowEye user, put NVDA as your secondary. And if your NVDA is primary, then you know, maybe get WindowEye for Office or something else, because there's this need to have more than one these days. I can't do anything with one screen reader anymore.
And the same thing with voiceover users, for those of you screaming at your MP3 players at the moment. Yes, that includes you. This week, I saw several people, even with these latest updates to iOS and Mac, to El Capitan, I didn't know that Terminal was a little difficult in voiceover with El Capitan. I learned that by reading Victor's feed and some others. Wow, that's kind of creepy. It really matters when it's the thing that you have to use or live in most often. So naturally that use case pertains to you, but it does mean that you have to use other devices in order to get things done, especially if it's related in a work environment. So there we go. Just a little bit of interest there if you care to, but definitely check out the links in the show note at blindbargains.com in order to hear some of those talks. Now, that was all work related and that's all boring. Let's play games. Games that involve fun things, especially things that might necessarily be kind of more up our alley. You used to play Go Ball, didn't you, Jay?
Actually, I was playing a little bit last week over at the sports camp, so it's really such a cool game.
Yeah, I remember you and Lucy Greco talking about that before we started recording. You know, I think there has to be a virtual way that would involve less torn ACLs and other ways of where, I mean, you don't have to go down like Steph Curry in the middle of a game, right? You know, it's,
are you, if you're not wearing a cup, press one.
that would be bad.
These are students from Drexel University though, that have done a game. I want to try this. I mean, so this is, they probably weren't aware of, there was a goalball game that came out about 10 years ago, but it was really, there was not a lot of skill. It was mostly based on choosing, you know, it was like those old baseball games, you know, to pitch a fastball, press one, to pitch a slider, press two. And it was kind of the same way. It was called Go Ball 1-on-1. And it was okay. But it would be much cooler. And what it sounds like this is a game that actually lets you hear the sounds and you move around. And it seems a lot more accurate. So it's a computer science class that was working on this over at Drexel, and I want to try it because just to see, you know, there were some students over at the Overbrook School in Philly that have played with it. So if anyone, any of you guys are listening, let us know. But maybe we can try to track down a copy of this thing. It sounds like
it would be cool. Then we could record commentary like Madden, you know, or something like that, and then record some major players and then digitize them in. And for those of you who don't follow video games, Madden is NFL football and it has commentators in it. And so they actually call the game as you're playing it. And they also have that for FIFA and rugby. The rugby one is really strange, but they're all done by Electronic Arts and have this really crazy commentary to it and personalities and fight songs. See, I mean, there's still awesome ways to go here. Whoa, so definitely check this out.
There's a lot of potential. Absolutely. So we'll see if we can get some more information on that. But it's kind of cool to read about people creating games and you know, doing some different experimentations. It's an audio game of a game that blind people play already. So that's kind of a pretty meta thing, but it's pretty cool.
I like it. Hey, I Liam's like it. Done crazier things. I thought of audio archery when I was playing audio game hub the other day. I was like, you know, this is a British guy. I'm so used to like Liam saying, you know, miss the target kind of thing. It's kind of crazy.
You know, they're having a discussion over on audiogames.net about whether or not to allow Steam platform audio games on their in their listings.
Wow. A blind legend is over there.
It was a big thing. And pretty much, so I guess the decision was made that, you know, the ones that you have to play it on the Steam platform. Like, if there's a way to download it, if you can download the game and then
alternative format. Right. Yeah. Okay.
And then you can play it, you know, pretty much, then they're going to allow it. But if it's like completely based on in Steam and you have to do everything in there, then
there's interesting. Problems. Yeah.
So there's some discussion over there.
Doing a lot of these public appearances lately. It is show season, as it were. What has been really talked about over at the AT Guys booth?
You know, really, there's a lot of things. The Aftershocks are still huge, which I know aren't necessarily a new product, but they still end up being one of the most popular because, you know, a lot of people are still new to the concept of headphones that don't actually go on your ears. So that's definitely been one of our big things. And the new the iPhone training guides from iHabilitation Canada, those are been really popular. By the National Convention in Orlando, we should have at least two or three new products. I hope to have them in the next few weeks. Also confirmed we're doing an AT Guys product presentation over in Minneapolis. So we're going to be running around at the conventions and hanging out, which is going to be cool. I think I get a month off now of those, so we're going to start we're done with the shows, but we're going to start preparing for the big conventions. These are this is kind of like the preseason, you know, kind of go through and make sure was playing around this week and did some payments with Apple Pay, Android Pay, so that's all set up for this year. We'll have that for the first time in the booth, which is awesome. Doing it through Square for anyone who's curious, but it works. That's just fine.
Square, not swear. Swear is after you pay for it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. SQUARE, Square. But definitely go to atguys.com and see the latest things that we have there. Did we mention the new Access World, by the way?
We did not mention the new Access World. I kind of missed. I rolled right past that. I guess I down arrowed. New Access World is out, and it has articles about the Prodigy. No, wait, the Prodigy.
Yes, and is it really worth $599 for the Freedom Scientific iOS training bundle? Bill Holton tries to answer that question. And,
definitely.
Of course, you get a Plex talk with it as well.
A read there. Oh, good catch. Otherwise, it would have made it to next week. There are other things, though, for us to talk about. Google I.O. was this week, and there isn't a lot to talk about, but it will be our discussion topic. And then we have some amazing things happening in Last Word and a tip related to Apple TV. All that and more right after this message from our sponsor.
Go make it happen with GoVision, the new transportable video magnifier from HIMSS. With GoVision, you get all you'd expect from a transportable read, write, and distance magnifier with optical character recognition, plus the ability to enlarge and customize files, photos, and videos from your cell phone, tablet, or computer. Look at a slideshow of pictures from your vacation right from your thumb drive. Bring the world into focus with GoVision. For more information, call us at 888-520-4467. Visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com and follow us on social media. HIMSS, lifestyle innovation.
Google I/O is a little bit of a different conference this year. For those of you who are not familiar, Google I/O is Google's developer conference. And we were talking during the break, it's kind of had a bit of a more developer feel to it this year. So no new flashy hardware,
nobody falling out of blimps.
Right. Lots more just kind of deep dive programming things. So because of that, we don't have an entire show to talk about that, but there were a few new things that were announced that we thought were interesting, at least deserved a segment. Starting off with the Amazon Echo competitor, I guess, Google Home.
Google Home. This is what they opened the show with. By the way, there are a couple of themes here. They opened the show on time, and they finished 5 minutes early, which was very appreciative. Yeah, I know. It moved at a pretty rapid pace, although there were a bunch of videos, just like if you're watching an Apple keynote. The other theme is that some of the stuff we're about to talk about isn't coming out soon. As in the case with Google Home, this seems to be poised for a fall release. And some actions of Google Assistant are actually rolling out as we're talking, either through the Google keyboard through iOS, Gboard, you might have seen, or through some of the updates that actually came to the Google keyboard for Android. The Assistant is more contextual now, and that is important because a lot of the demonstrations of Google Home made it very much seem, now mind you, these were demos, but made it very much feel like it was more of the Star Trek computer interaction when you're talking to the computer rather than the one-sided conversation you have with Amazon Echo. The device is super small and kind of follows along in the Chromecast philosophy of being tiny. Round, yep. Super small. It looks like one of those air fresheners from the old days that you could just stick on a wall. Probably made that. That's probably what it is. Use a lot of that far field communication technology you've heard them talk about at Amazon, and has some of the things that you, if you're an active Google user, will use a lot, and it will actually connect into the home and do a lot of things within it. So one of the demonstrations was during a canned video. If you had a Google phone, if you had a Google Cast, and a lot of people do, you actually could, say, have a child ask how many planets are in the solar system. And through the voice prompt, it told the child, show me a picture of that. It threw a picture up on the television through Chromecast because it saw it and could
all tied together.
And it would know when you left. Your Nest thermostat would know that you had left and told Google Home, because all the devices that you normally would carry with you went out the door.
This is not a far stretch. You say, oh, that's a pretty big investment. Google Phone, Google Cast, lots of people already have the first two. The Amazon Echo, and here's one of your big differences. The Amazon Echo, they built on pretty much nothing. They had Kindles. And other than that, the Amazon ecosystem is mostly selling products and, web servers and things like that.
It doesn't know nearly as much about you.
No.
It knows a lot, but it doesn't know nearly as much about you as Google does, especially if you live within the ecosystem. Now, don't make the assumption that, I have iOS. This doesn't apply to me. Oh, no. Many things that were discussed during I/O were iOS specific or were dual platform. In fact, the way that they did Google Board or the Gboard has search built within it, they kind of get around the whole idea of you have to use Apple to do your searching because there's a dictation in the keyboard, and that'll take you to Google dictation rather than going to Siri.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, they've had time to think about what their second play is. And their second play is to go where Microsoft is going. It doesn't matter what device it is. Doesn't matter. We are still a services company. We're not about hardware. And that was kind of one of the depression points for me, was that there wasn't really hardware mentioned all that much.
We'll get to that in a second. Nothing like that. Yeah. Looking at the hardware, so the actual home device that you mentioned, there's a couple interesting things about it. I mean, the one that jumps out to me is that they're all going to sync up with each other. So if you have an Amazon Echo and then you bought an Amazon Dot and they're in two different rooms, well, right now you have to give them different keywords, wake words, and try to control one or the other, where the Google Home devices allegedly are going to all sync up with each other, and they will kind of all connect with each other. Also, extended with that, they are adding multi-room support to Chromecast, which is a big requested feature. Right. So, hello, Sonos.
That goes right after Sonos, right, yep. Exactly. And it could follow you. technically, it could go from room to room by watching your phone, because generally everybody carries their phone on them.
And yeah, you start your conversation in the bedroom and then take it downstairs and it's still going and it knows you. I mean, yeah. Now, I don't know, say if two people were having conversations in two different parts of the house at once, I mean, who knows? There's a lot of little things like that.
Hypothetically, it could know that through profiles and
voices and things, yeah.
Ricky is on my Amazon. Ricky is on my Google Music account, my Play Music account, so she has the ability to be guest on my Chromecast or to take over and play her own playlist. So there is that possibility, and they've been working on this. They mentioned this during the beginning, that they've spent 10 years figuring out how they were going to move in their next direction and where that was going to come from, and bringing these services to the home and making it work regardless of the platform is where they are definitely heading. It was neat to be able to see, like, it would have notifications for you, and then you tell it when you're ready. So, okay, Google, I'm listening. And then it read, you know, well, what which the is notification another
big,
was.
Probably one of the biggest Echo requests, too, is being able to ping you. So, you know, they're going to have to catch up a bit. But, you know, as Google and many other companies have proven many times before, it's not always the best to be first. So it's still very early in the home voice assistant game. They've sold 3 million Echoes plus and probably a little more by now. There's a lot of room in that market. A
lot more Chromecasts. Oh, my God. It is one of the most popular home electronics devices, period.
Yes. And, you know, there's just lots of room for growth. And with the improvements in the Google Assistant on both on Android.
That's where I was going next. Yeah. So you take on Tap. Remember Tap last year with Google I.O. and we thought it was really interesting. They've gone a little bit beyond that. They've made it a little bit more, you know, voice-based. And the demonstration that was given was, tell me what movies are playing near me. Okay, that's a common one, right? We've all done that one.
Sure.
Next would be, well, I'm taking the family. Show me which family-related movies there are. And you could say that on the back of the first one. So it's contextual search, right? Then you could say, well, I like that one playing at Movies 10. Let's just go ahead and buy tickets for that. And then it would
and they go ahead have your bring
that
up info.
And you would buy the tickets. So it was all tied to that. And you could do these services. And it was basically doing Google Now cards, but really in the context of voice and voice search and voice assistant, and then bringing these extracurricular activities. And they would say that they could do this in all sorts of environments. They had spent a lot of time recording voices in very noisy environments, so that way they could improve their speech recognition, their voice recognition.
It seems like anything that you've ever seen on an IVR, as in those phone systems that you call in and press one or say this, say that, anything like that could be brought to a voice assistant, you know, for one. And then there's other things beyond that you could do as well. So that's really, the IVR is really where a lot of this started 10, 15 years ago, as far as, and earlier than that, as far, you know, trying to, you know, looking up your airline reservations and trying to do, you know, goofy things like that. But of course, you know, that's not on the phone. If you add a screen or if you add other, you know, possibilities, there's so much that's, you know, potential. I don't think a lot of it has been realized yet.
Yeah, a lot of the speech stuff is Star Trek based. I had mentioned this before on other shows, but I'll mention it again. The way that Google approaches things is the Star Trek philosophy. You ask a query, you get something back, you interact. You know, tea, Earl Grey hot. The way that Apple was moving with Siri initially was to have a conversation with droids, Star Wars. You know, you would have a conversation with C-3PO and you would have that kind of interaction. And, you know, they hired Hollywood writers and had canned and scripted answers for certain questions. That wasn't the way that Google wanted. Google wants to go in a, you know, 1+1 or 1=0. And there we go. Off it goes. That's your query. That's your information. And you move on. It's to fade into the background and then use that device moving forward. Now, there is the possibility of having third-party APIs and things tie into, just like the Echo. I don't know about the programmable part unless you, you know, want to learn a lot more about Android and other apps, but there is the ability for that still to happen. And what also got mentioned was new apps, Allo and Duo. Now, Allo is a new messaging app. There has been a lot put into messaging. You might have read
another new messaging app.
Yeah.
How many different new messaging apps have been announced over the years?
I know. Okay. There's some messaging within YouTube now. You can actually do messages within YouTube in certain ways. And I kind of blame Facebook for this, because Messenger is no longer Messenger. You can play games in Facebook Messenger and all these other side points. It's, you know, it's kind of the
Trojan horse. They separated the app, now they're adding stuff back.
Back in, really yeah. But Allo is a little bit more towards the ability to have messages go back and forth, and encryption is there. And it's another play at what Google has always wanted to do. But here's the twist and why it's worth mentioning. Jay and I could be in a say a message with Patrick, and say we're at a convention and we talk about a particular restaurant we want to go to. Google would then recommend a Google card based on what we had talked about, where it is, you know, where is that address? You know, boom, there it is. Would you like to make reservations right here and now for the three of you?
So it's kind of like if someone were eavesdropping on your entire conversation and then just throwing in random things that they think are going to...
It can do that. You have the ability to open this up and do certain Google Now actions, or what we're familiar with Google actions, and bring them into the app and have that conversation in a group message kind of situation. It's very reminiscent of what Google Wave wanted to be ages ago.
The image recognition... It's interesting. I saw the example of, you know, it could recognize that there was a picture
of forms of pasta.
Yeah. Or like a dog, like a breed of dog. And then
you could give a canned answer. So if you didn't want to type out an answer, you could actually come back and say, you know, nice Burmese mountain dog is what Andy Anako said on Twit, which I thought was really funny. But it would have canned answers, so you didn't have to go through the necessary ability of having to do that, almost like a chat bot.
This comes from Google's newer email app called Inbox, which is really cool if you haven't played with it yet. It's quite accessible on the web and on the mobiles. And one of the big features it has is called Smart Replies, where say if Joe were to write me to say, hey, can we have a meeting tomorrow at 3? It'll give me options that I could say, yes, that's a good time. No, how about something else? You know, and it gives you 3 or 4, and it learns from what you do. So they have this technology. Now they're kind of extending it. It sounds like over to Allo, as you're pronouncing it. Is that how you're supposed to say it?
Allo?
Allo? Got you.
Okay. Allo, Allo? You know, there's a great famous British comedy. Getting back to what you were saying, though, about somebody eavesdropping and all of that, we're back to what I was just talking about with the Amazon Echo. Where do you want your data to be stored? Who do you want to know what about you for convenience? This is going to be the argument everyone's going to have in memoriam. Do you feel comfortable with Apple? Great, fantastic. Do you feel comfortable with Amazon knowing a whole bunch about you and the Amazon Echo? Great, fantastic. But the way to get a lot of these services and to make your life more efficient, quote unquote, is to rely a bit on these companies knowing something about you.
And the ways to do this are not remote. I mean, if you're the type of person that says, oh, I don't want to share any of my data with anyone, your options are...
highly unlikely. That's not happening in one way or another already.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're just doing... okay, if you're doing email, you're doing email on your own server and you're not doing much of anything else, you're going to have to use, you know, purely desktop apps that aren't sharing with anyone. You know, you do the old school, you could do your calendar on your own, you know, you could do things like that. But the thing is, if you have apps like that, they're not going to connect with anything or anybody. Maybe that's okay to you. Maybe you're willing to sacrifice
your ISP
that,
knows more about you than any of these companies, and God help you there. But otherwise, if I wrote you to Gmail and I felt that way, Gmail's still looking. You know, you're writing to somebody else and they still... I'm not trying to be a doom and gloom sayer here and just say, you know, that's fate and that's just the way it is. It's just another way of making this approach to how comfortable do you feel in order to get some of these services that would benefit our community.
And we've traded off, you know, yeah, I mean, a lot of this image recognition stuff happens because of cloud learning and learning from and crowd learning. That's how Google is able to recognize voice as well, or how Facebook is able to recognize images. A lot of that is from looking at
some countries, like some countries in Europe have asked Facebook to turn off facial recognition for privacy concerns because of that. Well, that's fantastic. But then again, that would benefit us. And that's going to be something moving forward that we're going to have to kind of deal with, especially when we get to self-driving cars. That's all another comment for another day. Duo would be a great way, though, for us to discuss it with one-on-one communication between two people using WebRTC and some other neat codecs. Duo is kind of FaceTime, but multi-platform, because you can use this with iOS, Android, and be able to talk back and forth. So it doesn't necessarily deprecate Hangouts, but it does give you the ability to do things that you would not normally find in some other video messaging apps like Skype or others, because you could actually have a couple of seconds of you making the call. So it sees you and you could see, oh, that's Jay. He's calling me from the booth. I should pick that up. And so you kind of get an idea of what's going on for that other person when they're making the call. And that gives you an idea of whether you want to accept it or not, or say swipe up and give a canned response.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I'm gonna have to wait and see how this one fans out. I mean, I already have Hangout. Let's see, on my phone, if I wanted to video chat you, I have Hangouts, WhatsApp, Skype, Facebook, the old video calling thing that's already, you know,
and built if you're into on iOS, phone. Then we could do FaceTime.
Yeah, you know, and I'm missing a couple, and then there's more that are just audio.
Oh, sure.
You know, so,
sure.
You know, Team Talk, Roger. It's just like, and that's just the ones I have installed.
Right.
So I'm going to need to see a little more of this.
Where does this fit in? I think this is good, though. I think this is kind of Google's answer to move to OS, right? You came up with a way to pull somebody off of Android and pull them into your ecosystem. Great. We have a way of doing something that you do internally, like iMessage and, you know, with FaceTime. Well, now if you still have a multi-OS family, they can stay within our services and not have to worry about what
Hangouts. We already had Hangouts.
Yeah. Hangouts, though, is like Facebook Messenger. It actually got too much. It actually was trying to take over.
I've never had too many problems. You go in, you choose the person's name, you choose video call. And to me, it never seemed like a bloated piece. It was never that hard to figure out how do I video call someone in Hangouts. It was never, you know, a big issue for me. So, I mean, sometimes you have to see these things and try the apps out.
Same thing was said about you just mentioned Inbox. Some people were like, why do I need this?
Exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, you know, Inbox, when it first came out, that's exactly where I was going. Inbox at first, when they first saw the why we have another mail app, you know, and why are they maintaining two of these at once? But, you know, it does things quite a bit differently. So if Duel's going to do things differently, you know, I'll probably install it and at least see what happens. And then
maybe it's the default in Android N. That's right there. We still don't know what N's going to mean. Neither does Google. They invited people to name it for them. There's a contest going on about suggested names for Android N. But what they did say was that this third release is kind of sort of the beta of N. Yeah, nerds. That would be that would be very Napoleon. I like Napoleon because I'm from New Orleans and Neapolitan? Those are good. That would be good. Yeah, we need some more chocolate vanilla and strawberry ice cream, Marge. Famous Simpsons quote.
Your Nexus 7s aren't going to run this thing, any of them. But your newer, if you have a Nexus 5X, 6P,
still supporting the 9, even though it's not available 9, on the website.
And a couple is it supporting? There was a couple Sony's or whatever too that were in this list.
Xperia's,
So,
Xperia plays
because I was looking because having my Nexus 7, which I'd still have, and I'm probably gonna about to sell on the Blind Bargains Classifieds because now it's not getting updates, so I won't be selling it for very much. But that was a cheap way to try the latest Androids as they were coming out. So now all of the current options, even the 9, I think is still like $250-$300. There's no $100 option for me to grab.
Pixel C is what everybody kept waving around. That's a $500 32 gig tablet that I'm just not crazy about dropping.
One of the things, if you hear this,
cash for
accessibility wise, people are saying that N, the responsiveness on N has jumped quite a bit, as in a good way. For accessibility, especially using the on-screen keyboard and things like that. I've heard that from several people now. So that is a very exciting development, if that's true, because that's certainly one of the things that has held Android back in some ways and trying to use the keyboard and things like that. So that in itself, and maybe someone can do a demo on this, so I know it's kind of hard to demo responsiveness sometimes in audio. Yeah, but that in itself excites me as far as accessibility and future features.
Some of the back-end stuff is kind of neat, too. They're kind of adopting the Chrome philosophy of having the older version behind you, right? So you would seamlessly update if there was a newer version. And every time you would reboot the device or every time a certain amount of time would go by, you would have the ability to have things updated in Android. That way they could have more security updates happening at a rapid clip and probably OTA. And you could do that through Wi-Fi, so you're not really jacking with the carrier as much, is my thought. The ability to be able to get to some of those updates is crucial. More security is being built in for the ground up. Do you think they'll do it
like Chrome, where you can get like a beta, you know, the beta version or the beta channel and say,
I would think you would just subscribe to it. And then I'm doing that right now with the Google search app, where I agreed that I would have a beta version of the Google search app, and that updates kind of like Firefox, not nightly, but, you know, not like a canary build, but it updates pretty regularly with updates to Google search, and I'll see differences in my search or the way my Google Now cards are responding. And I'm okay. Again, I'm totally cool with that because I'm interested in that happening. The same way, you know, a lot of these background services are working in ways you wouldn't expect. Ingress is a Google Maps game that Nintendo is sort of using for Pokemon Go. So you would actually travel in the real world and be able to capture Pokemon based on Google Maps, which is kind of weird and crazy. But people are using that kind of technology to work in the background and make things work a lot better. I like this idea. There's a 3D engine called Vulkan that's being placed inside Android. So this will give Android the ability to do console-like graphics. It's kind of their answer to Apple's Metal that you might remember from WWDC. Probably things like the NVIDIA Shield tablet will take advantage of that more than just about anybody else. But it's definitely a move in the right direction. A little bit talked about Android TV, the ability that N could actually help you do like DVR content. That seems like it's kind of hand in hand with Google Fiber and the ability to do, you know, TV through Google Fiber. There's a little bit of alphabet crossover there. The other things that I liked about N was the recents thing, right? So you're going to be able to tap recents and kind of have an alt tab and go between two apps really quickly. They found that 99% of people only utilize 7 apps at once, so it'll start killing apps off in the background, so it's not taking up memory.
That list can get pretty long. And I guess the clear all, which a lot of devices already have a clear all button.
Yeah. It was kind of sort of put in there automatically by whatever skin you were using.
Right. Yeah. It's on my S7, but that's going to become a default now as well for recent apps. So that's, the split screen has been getting better. That's one big thing. And if you haven't noticed, you can do split screen. And yes, that is pretty much accessible from the reports. As you were mentioning, this is the third version of N preview. It's a beta and you can get it now, and they're saying it's pretty stable. So if you go ahead and try it out, and then later this summer, I guess what we're hearing for the actual release on the first devices.
They're saying late summer. It seems like, again, that theme is cropping up again. Home, Google Home this fall, and for the summer, although you can get it now on devices like your Nexi or some third-party platforms can support it. Some of the, like you were saying, Sony phones can do it. The preview, they explained why they had released that so early, and they had said that there was a lot of activity already, so that way people came in kind of up to speed when they got to I.O. They felt like it was kind of a running start, if you will. And there seems to be a more talked about today. We haven't had an opportunity to read these articles, but it seems like the Android store and just about all the Android apps are coming over to Chrome.
You can install them on Chrome, and they're doing a lot of improvements to Play. You mentioned betas a minute ago. If there's a big public beta such as Google Search, those are actually just going to be a lot easier to find now on Play, and that's one of the things. So if you are a cutting edge type person, you like playing with the new stuff, the betas are going to be a little more easy to find. I'm assuming maybe TalkBack will be in that thing. It was always a bit of an interesting experience to sign up to the TalkBack beta. So maybe that'll get opened up a little further as we go down the line. A couple other things before we wrap up here. Did you see much with this Android Wear 2? One of the big things that I noticed, and we don't have updated documentation, with the old Android Wear, you couldn't enable accessibility with outside assistance. I have not seen any confirmation if that's changed.
I have not read anything. The only thing I knew was that LTE out of the box, so it's not dependent on your phone. That's kind of a requirement, right? Just means it's probably bigger and bulky and hotter.
But there's not dependent, but using LTE also means that's an extra $10 a month for most of you. If you want to actually use it, it's completely separate from your phone, then you're going to pay more than if you were to tether it to your phone. So generally,
data sharing is going to be a little easier, and you could say, list what you've eaten in one app, then go running with Runkeeper, and then have that recognize it and delete it from your calorie counter, so you know whether you could splurge and have ice cream at the end of the day. There was a lot of talk about data stores and being able to tap into things and share that kind of information back and forth between apps. You probably get a Google Now reminder to tell you cheated. And so you could build your playlist in Google Play and pull it over to your watch. There was a lot of talk about a keyboard within the watch. So you could actually do things and type out responses and replies. Ars Technica has a great article here that says Android Wear 2.0 is everything you've known about Android Wear, but better, kind of just a refinement. And that makes a lot of sense. They announced that they had 12 watch manufacturers working with them. There's like 4 gigs on the watch for default now. So you could have some offline music or things downloaded. So you had it for a run or that kind of thing. The Android faces, like the Android Wear faces, could actually be their own platforms and apps. So you could do things within them that you couldn't do before. And it's probably just a lightening of the restriction, or at least having more memory on board these watches. It remains to be seen how that works out for the most part, because that too will be available later this year. There again, if you are wanting to be cutting edge and bleeding edge, you can go download all this stuff and start playing with it if your hardware allows. But if you're waiting for the consumer end of this, there's nothing you can run out and buy today or use, except the possibility of instant apps. This
is interesting.
Is a trip. The Verge thinks it was the most definitive moment coming out of Google I.O. Now, normally you guys know that we try to put things in the order that they happen in show notes. I changed it around a little bit because between where Android Wear left off and where we're going to next was Google VR. And to be honest with you, I'm not a big not a VR type person.
Doesn't really do much for
us. There was a lot of talk about VR. There was a lot of information in Android N to work with VR and 360 degree stuff. There were some hardware announcements made about that. I have a link in the show notes if you're interested at blindbargains.com.
Yeah, it's not ours.
The only thing that I will say is super cool about this versus other VR stuff that I've remotely read about or paid attention to is the educational environment. Google has a lot of education through Chrome and Chromebooks. They will leverage that in the fact that if you wanted to, say, learn about the pyramids of Giza or go through Ontario, you would look it up in Google Maps and then have that 360 video pop right up in your VR. That's pretty amazing, that to have the ability to transport yourself virtually to wherever you were looking at on Google Earth or Google Maps is one step closer to the holodeck. So that is, again, right within Google's wheelhouse, and it makes a lot of sense for people who have more vision than us. So awesome, way to go. That is super cool. Hopefully audio comes along for the ride. But instant apps goes all the way back to Jelly Bean, and it's the idea that you would use this new AMP, the accelerated web pages, to simulate an app without you having to install an app. And the way that this was described was, going back to that movie example, we would say, let's go see Captain America, right? Oh, I could buy tickets now, but I don't have the Fandango app. But if I tap on the Fandango logo, it would launch the app, let me purchase it through Android Pay or whatever payment system, and I would have that, but I didn't have to go to the Play Store and install Fandango. It actually went and got the pieces it needed, the slices of the app it needed, streamed it down to the device, and then let it go when it was done.
Yeah, and we're going to wonder, accessibility-wise, how is that presented? Because if you don't know, a lot of apps are actually just websites that are kind of wrapped in some sort of way that makes it look like an app. And you're actually just you're browsing
Microsoft
through a website.
Microsoft got accused of doing with Windows 10 last year.
So, you know, a lot of them are like that. But, of course, a lot of apps are much more what we call native. In other words, they work directly on the device and they don't look like a web page. The way you can tell Android-wise accessibility, if you have all the extra options for navigation granularity, such as browsing by headings, links, controls, then you're in a web view or a web app. And if you don't see those, if you just see pages, characters, words, then you are in a native app. So for the Fandango example that you mentioned, it'll be interesting to see how does that come down, both from as a developer, how do you write it so it works in such a way? How do you segment this out? And also, I mean, I'm sure it'll be accessible in some way. There's no reason to think it wouldn't be accessible, but right. How is it, you know, how is it going to present itself and how fluid is it going to be? But it definitely seems, because yeah, you know what, that happens every so often where it's like, I want to do this new feature, or I want to try something out, but then, you know, of course, like, you need to download this app. You know, if I wanted to, authorize some stuff, sometimes like Facebook and things like that, before I had the actual Facebook app installed, it's like, you know, you need to download Facebook to authorize this. Why? I just want to authorize it. You know, just goofy things like that. So
it harkens back to all those TED Talks and things you would see on the Computer Chronicles, that the web would be the app, right? That you wouldn't worry about what it was or where it was or how it worked.
And
or
it's becoming that way on Windows. I mean, and a Mac. So
yeah, universal apps in Windows, and definitely heading this way with the power of the cloud for Google and the ability to just work within these silos. And it just becomes a seamless integration of going from one place to the other. We're back though to what we were talking about a minute ago. Your profile would have to be set up in such a way that the payment option would be automatic. You could, you know, PayPal, what have you, but somehow, somewhere, some way that's out of the way. And, you know, whether you're using a fingerprint or a code or whatever, you would still be able to be something you are, something you know, and something you have, the ability to get through security. And to be able to do that without any problem of worrying about whether, you know, did I just buy a car, you know, or something like that. That is very interesting to think of in the concept of what accessibility is, could be, and where it's going in the future, because we're used to a certain paradigm of how to interact with things, right? And
yep.
Whether that's in Windows or whether that's in Mac, you know, on Mac OS or something like that, these concepts are going far beyond that. And some countries are already past that. Some countries like Africa and others are already in this philosophy where the mobile device is their computer. End of story. They didn't go through the PC acceleration and revolution that we went through. They came up growing and knowing nothing but small screens.
A lot of older blind are in that situation where they've never had a computer, but they're using an iPhone now. So yeah. It's becoming more and more common. And luckily, there's more and more things that you can do on your mobile device now that you don't need a computer for. Most things you don't need a computer for anymore. Some of the more complex things you still do. But as mobile devices are expanding, becoming more powerful, supporting keyboards where it makes sense, it's going to be at some point, you know, just like Chrome.
50% of the searches come from mobile, they mm-hmm. said at the beginning.
And, you know, and we gloss over this Chrome and Android merger kind of thing. But this is starting to happen a bit. You'll be able to install Play Store apps on Chrome. And we don't know, how is that going to work? Is that going to be speaking through TalkBack or ChromeVox, which is Chrome's screen reader? So we'll see what happens there. And, you know, we're going to have to kind of see how this fans out. ChromeVox actually has been getting quite a few updates. Apparently, has made a lot of improvements. So was that in preparation for all of this? Or are they going to have to do something else? But a lot to know.
Yeah, a lot to look forward to in the future. Like I said, very little that you can walk out the door with today unless you want to buy a new, you know, 5, you know, or 6P and then download this stuff, then go for it. Or Pixel C, a lot of people running around with Pixel Cs. That's kind of the way that we're looking for the, you know, far as the Google stuff is, you know, going. But for things like iOS, some of that stuff is coming later this summer. And of course, the Gboard keyboard app that I mentioned is available now. And that gives you the ability to use that and start using some of the search things that were kind of, again, there, but not really there. There wasn't a lot talked about with Play services, so nothing really much for Play movies, TVs, books. That's probably in the breakout sessions. Not much for Android TV, but really honestly, did you think there was going to be that much for Android TV? It got mentioned. It got mentioned that it was inside televisions like Vizio. But things that we've heard about before didn't really show up here.
No. And that's most of the keynote. And there's 2 days of this. It's actually still going on as we're recording this. So there may be some more little
things
that'll
come out
that we'll have on. We'll certainly cover that. And for you Apple fans, WWDC, which is kind of Apple's developer version of this, is coming right up. And we'll definitely do some coverage of that as well. A little bit of Google, just kind of to whet your appetite for the future of Android here on the Blind Bargains cast. And if you've had enough of Google, hey, Joe has an Apple tip.
Yay! Tip for Apple. That and a little bit of sound off and the last word all coming up on Blind Bargains Cast 62. Earlier on the show, we discussed iOS and macOS updates, but there was also an update to tvOS, and that got me to thinking, hey, there are a couple of tips I don't think we've talked about here already on BBQ about the fourth generation Apple TV. So let's grab the old trusty dusty remote and look at it for a second. Did you know that you can actually fast forward or rewind 10 seconds by simply clicking either side of the remote. Yeah, that big button up at the top, you can click the left side, or you can click the right side to be able to fast forward or rewind. So click left to go back 10 seconds, click right to go forward 10 seconds. And if you hold it down, you'll forward a little bit more, but VoiceOver won't necessarily read how fast you've gone within a file. So that can be a little bit daunting, and it might be worth using the old Siri button to be able to say, fast forward 5 minutes or something like that, or go to 20 minutes within a program. Now, speaking of Siri, you can actually use Siri to dictate passwords. That can be super helpful when setting up a bunch of new things on an Apple TV, i.e., you know, apps like, AMC, ABC, Fox Now, FX Now. You have to type in that stuff over and over and over again. Well, they added recents, so you can actually go down and type in your recent email. And so type in an email once, and then it remembers that, and you can actually highlight that, click on that, and choose that to get through email submissions faster. But for passwords, oh man, if you're using a long 25-digit random password, or if you just have a lot of crazy characters with your password, that could be a real problem to go in and, well, click it over and over and over again with a remote, swipe, click, swipe, click. So you can actually hold the Siri button down and dictate your password. And it does do characters. You just have to know the exact symbols you might want. And you do have to say uppercase or lowercase. And that is a time saver. You can also use Siri to, say, make some suggestions or make searches faster, like show me all the Tom Cruise movies, or give me some sci-fi movies, or recommend some games. And that is actually the coolest thing, because then it takes you to the App Store. You can do searches within the App Store. You just have to say search for the App Store, or search within the App Store for blank. And that will make searching a little easier as well. So there you go, a couple of quick tips, and we've got a whole list, including a mention of VoiceOver in this mainstream article. If you head on over to blindbargains.com and head over to audio, go to the 62 show notes page, you'll find the link for this and all the other tips that are mentioned here.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
Let's do some web feedback this time. People Woo-hoo! Commenting over on blindbargains.com on our latest shows and some other posts that we've had. One of the Windows 10 articles. Well, we had two in 2 days. First, it was the end of the free updates, and then the one right after that. Oh, wait, it's not. It'll be free for blind people, as we talked about earlier in the show. But a couple comments on that. One from CW said, I personally haven't found a good reason to update to Windows 10. I've heard some podcasts about how to get around in 10. The things that drive me from it, that is Microsoft just shoving it down my throat. I'll update when I'm ready to.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I love Win 10, and it is faster and easier and awesomer. And unless you have a true reason, like let's say your version of Screen Reader or Screen Magnifier requires you to pay money to update.
Yeah.
I don't find a lot of reasons to stay in Win 7. I really don't.
I don't. You know, and lots of people are saying that they are hearing lots of things about, you know, yeah, sure, 10 doesn't work with Edge. That's fine. Don't use Edge. We know that.
Yeah. And in fact, Narrator asks you when you launch Narrator, is this, would you like to use Edge? No? Okay,
no,
good.
No, we don't. And a lot of the other things, I find when Windows 10 does crash or my screen reader crashes, it seems to be a lot easier to recover without a reboot. That's one of the big changes that I've noticed.
If you're buying a new machine, you're pretty much stuck on Windows 10 because a lot of the new machines are made for that. Drivers are made for that. Downgrading is a bad idea there. And in some cases, in the future, Intel won't even support them on the chipset. So forget that. And if you're an older machine, Win 7, then stay on Win 7. And eventually those notifications will go away. Microsoft did say they would stop bugging you.
Yeah. And you do have 3 or 4 years of support of 7 remaining. So
yeah, you're okay there. But if you're Win 8 or Win 8.1, there is virtually hardly any use case I can think of that would really require you, unless you're driver specific and locked.
Get out of Win 8. Yeah. Gallagher 123123 says, you know, why don't they just keep making it free? It's free. Apple has free updates pretty much, and so does Google. And that's one of the reasons that they prefer a Mac. Now,
corporations and the enterprise make a lot of money for Microsoft, and that's kind of why that was. It was really aimed at home and consumers anyway. but the big money is OEMs.
I wouldn't be surprised again if that enterprise. Free update gets extended.
Yeah, you know, it's entirely possible. But if Microsoft was getting money from, say, computer manufacturers more, or if the Windows Store generated more income, then I would imagine Microsoft wouldn't have any issue with that. But remember, you can't compare Apple to Microsoft. That's just not realistic. Apples to Mountain Views.
Jay Mannion finally has a question. We posted a Chromebook deal from an Asus. And it said, how accessible is this really these days? And I mentioned this a minute ago, and I haven't explored a lot personally, but there has been apparently either a complete rewrite or some major changes in ChromeVox in what was called ChromeVox Next. So perhaps someone who has a little more experience can write in and help us out here. But it sounds like a lot has been done to ChromeVox lately, and we might need to take a more revisited look at where that's been.
HP Chromebooks and Acer Chromebooks are getting amazing reviews on hardware, that they're pretty decent.
Do you guys
hardware.
Have one anymore? Is it in like the storage bin, pretty much like how mine is at the moment?
Buddy Brandon was my guy that I would turn to for ChromeVox.
All right. Well,
I have really not played with it. Although I'll probably have to have one for testing purposes around here, the same way that I'm going to break down and have to get a Kindle tablet.
Well, it's running Android apps too, then yeah, there's a little more intrigue. There's your Android with a keyboard.
But I don't think I need a Chromebook Pixel. That's still pretty pricey. I think we'll just stay out of that territory. By the way, we won't have to worry about testing Lumias. Seems like Microsoft this week and got rid of the Lumia division in a way. They're selling it for $350 million to Foxconn, leading the way up to your prediction of Surface phones happening this year to be possible. I mean, maybe that's this fall. Maybe we'll finally see Surface phones instead of Win Mobile, although there is still Windows 10 Mobile out there and they're still supporting it. But that was a definite change that we should see. I did see somebody, I think it was Nimer, somebody said that they were using a Windows 10 phone and it wasn't as horrible as they had initially thought.
So that brings us we have some interesting stories here.
The last word is always a bunch of interesting things. You know, I never go looking for these audio files. They find me. And
I don't want to know what your sources are for these. This one's interesting, though.
This one's a bit disturbing because on its whole, if I explain it to you, you're going to say, ugh. But when you hear it, you're going to be surprised because I found it absolutely riveting. Patrick, pull this one up.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb and the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun. Your brain gets smart, but your head gets dumb. So much to do, so much to see. So what's wrong with taking the back streets? You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow.
This is the sound of Smash Mouth.
So what you're hearing there is Smash Mouth's All-Star kind of slowed down a little bit there, put into the back of Disturbed's cover of The Sound of Silence, and called The Sound of Smash Mouth, and it works incredibly well.
There's several things going on here. It's really interesting. They took the vocals of All-Star.
Yep. They
slowed it down, and they kind of moved some of the notes to make it more of in a minor key so it fit. So they actually, you know, a lot of times mashups will just take the track and be done with it.
Yeah.
They actually put a lot of musical attention to it to make sure it would fit.
And it works better than it should. It really does. I'd never really thought that Sound of Silence had much to do with All-Star, but yeah, Okay. And it's not, you're right. It's a little bit of trickery. It's not as crazy as that David Bowie, Lemmy Kill, Mr. Motorhead one that I had from a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I heard this one. There's another one I had, and I might pull it up next week, is Pink Panther in a Minor Key. That one is also very disturbing. Mm. Yeah. It's the Pink Panther theme, but in a minor key. It's impressive what people will do and post on YouTube. I have to admit that. The same thing might be said for a follow-up to one of your stories from last week. Windows 7 on a smartwatch. If you got 3 hours,
you can. Takes just a bit to boot, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. Gonna suck when you do Windows updates.
It's start it now. Really wait to the end of the next show. We'll have it up on
exactly.
Bye. BBcast, you can load 63. Windows
7 on your Android Wear smartwatch, but it will take 3 hours to boot.
Is it more accessible than the Android Wear?
I did actually think of that. This comes from another one of those. Somebody has too much time on their hands to do something very incredible. Wow. So Windows 95 over there and Windows 7 this week, and somebody got Windows 95 to run on their Nintendo system, which I thought was
even better. Works though if you have like Nintendo sound as your sound scheme. I mean, you really got to kind of do it all up. Disturbing doesn't even begin to describe. So shout out to Anaji. One of our
we were
our
thinking of her because it was Google I.O. and we usually absolutely. Think of Steve, not Nana.
Yeah, Autopost is the eyes free list. Let's see what she talked. Let's see what she's talking about.
Oh, cool. Something about the dialer? Maybe.
Yeah. So, no, something about Android.
Marshmallow?
No. She leaked a story about a Bluetooth tampon.
Okay. That doesn't sound like Annette at all. I mean, she didn't do an actual demo once of a book app and then played 50 Shades of Grey.
That
never happened. Well,
there is no demo of this on Inclusive Android at this point.
Oh,
this
is probably man.
Good. but you
she'll
can
have
get,
to let us know how that works out. How does this work out?
Well, okay. Well, I'm only going from the article because, my experience is really limited.
Might be a little limited.
By limited, I can understand that. Non-existent. Yeah. Non-existent. Okay. But it will tell you when the tampon is full.
Good.
Via the app. So not only do you have to wear the tampon, which has wires.
that might be thrilling for some.
So that wire comes out. And then it goes connects to the Bluetooth transmitter, which you wear somewhere around your waist. So this is wire coming out of your pants.
Okay.
Which goes to this app.
You know, we make fun, but to be absolutely honest, for those who have motor impairment or lower body extremity issues, this might actually be very helpful for some. I this is the vocational rehabilitation.
There may be, I don't know. I mean, this ladies, feedback at blindbargains.com.
Yeah. I'll be very careful when I mention this to my girlfriend.
But you have to buy tampons that fit the app too. That's the thing. You can't. You have to switch. There's an ongoing.
Does it send notifications to have your boyfriend go in the store and buy them for you? Because that would be.
Yeah, right. Maybe they could sync this up with Google Home.
That's never happened.
Because you can already you can sync
before
that up
with Amazon those, folks there were boyfriends who had to go into the drugstore
and just press the button
that happened it was a long time ago. We rode dinosaurs to the grocery store. Interesting
mention, by the way, the name of the I just need to mention that I just remember the name of this thing, my.flow,
which is different than workflows, depending how that works out.
That's going to do it, folks.
Yeah, the last word. If you have questions, like why, go ahead and send them to feedback at blindbargains.com.
You what is can the send app accessible? Us,
Steve Sejuan. Steve Sejuan will actually tell us. Steve of Maine. We'll get right on that. He asked me that during the Google I.O. and I said, hey, okay, Google, remind me to poke Steve with a telescopic cane when I get to Minnesota. there's a lot you can do by talking to us on Twitter. You can see conversations like that with Steve and myself by heading over to twitter.com/RangerStation. You'll get a lot of the stories that didn't make it to the news this week. You can also see
what didn't make it if that one did.
The new Star Trek trailer is up. Then Ghostbusters. You can also find out about how we're doing with the ID Mate Galaxy. Ricky and I have been talking about it back and forth about that and getting into a good conversation over there. You can also find all of these stories and more, including our last comments there on the show notes at blindbargains.com. So head on over to that, then choose the audio section. While you're there, head on over and take a listen to some of the audio that we have from CSUN 2016, which also just so happens to have two presentations from our good sponsors over at HIMS from CSUN 2016.
HIMS Lifestyle Innovation. Thank you so much. And by the way, you can get the AT Guys stuff over at atguys.com. I'm done with the shows for the moment until NFB in Orlando, which the exhibit hall is July 1 to 4. And then doing a presentation in Minneapolis at ACB that is going to be on July the 7th. So definitely stop by and hang out with us. And you can figure out some of the latest things that we have and follow AT Guys on Twitter, support at atguys.com, and of course go to the website atguys.com or call us up at 269-216-4798. And thanks to everyone who said hi to us here at all the recent shows. Had a lot of nice comments about the podcast, and I really appreciate those of you that are listening and giving us your feedback and saying hi to us in person. We do really appreciate it.
Or if you're listening to us on the Google Play through that particular area, or if you're listening to us through your Amazon Echo, TuneIn, whatever, let us know. We'd love to hear about that. And remember, you can also send in submissions so you can actually be a part of this wild and crazy situation that we call the Blind Bargains Cast. So for this week, I think that'll just about do it. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2016.